Lake Effect Weekend continues on WUWM. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. As the pool of Democrats vying for the presidency has narrowed down to two main contenders, there's another larger question facing the Democratic Party. What happens if they win? According to Dan Pfeiffer, winning the 2020 election would be just the beginning of what he calls the untrumping of America. That's also the title of his new book, which looks at the evolution of the Republican Party and gives advice on how Democrats can win the White House. Pfeiffer is a former aide to President Barack Obama, and he's one of the hosts of Pod Save America. He'll be in Milwaukee this Monday for an onstage event with Lake Effect's Joy Powers at Turner Hall. But first, he joined Joy Powers by phone in California to talk about his book, Untrumping America.
The book talks about, of course, the trumping of America, and it talks about it as a kind of phenomenon in some ways divorced from Trump himself, and instead the kind of dawning of this next era in the Republican Party. Can you unpack that a bit?
Sure. I wish I had said it that well in the book. That was very well said on your part. I think ultimately Democrats have to recognize that Trump is not an aberration. He is not an accident. He's actually the logical extension of Republican politics of the last few decades. And the way I sort of describe it is Donald Trump did to the Republican Party what he did to New York real estate, which was he found a pre-existing structure, put his name on it, perhaps made it a little tackier. And what that means for Democrats is we have to recognize that even if we defeat Trump in 2020, the forces that allowed someone like Donald Trump to lead the Republican Party to become president will still exist. And that the next Republican presidential nominee or president will be someone who is probably a better behaved, less easily distracted version of Trump.
Yeah, you say in the book, you know, there will be no Republican epiphany during or after Trump. And when you look at a lot of coverage just in general of the Trump administration, particularly from people who are more left-leaning, there is this idea that, you know, he's not just the symptom, he's the cause. And once he's gone, you know, there will be some sort of repenting Republicans. So when you say there won't be an epiphany, what are you getting at?
Ultimately, politicians respond to political incentives. And the political incentives in the Republican Party are for behavior like Trump's. It has become a racial grievance party. And they may say the arguments differently. It may be less crass. It may have fewer typos. But the same argument, the same message about sowing fear among older conservative white voters about a changing America will be the message of the next Republican. And we see it. Look at all the Republicans who are running up and down the ballot. They sound exactly like Trump. Like sometimes it's more polished, but it's just like Trump. You know, and you can look at someone like Lindsey Graham, who was someone who, when I first went to work for Barack Obama, was in the White House all the time trying to work with Barack Obama on climate change and gun control and immigration reform. And then now is basically a Trump apologist by profession. And that is not doing that because Donald Trump holds some cult-like power over him. He's doing that because that's what the voters who put Trump in office want. And so as long as we live in that world, Republicans are going to respond to Trump voters because Trump voters are Republican voters.
You do take a lot of these Republicans to task in the book, including Mitch McConnell, who does not come off well, well in Untrumping America.
Yeah.
And something you get to, which I think is pretty interesting, is, you know, you come to the conclusion that Republicans just want to win. And as long as that's a reality, Democrats are going to have some difficulty winning elections. Why do you believe that Republicans just want to win?
Well, I mean, because they, to a person, think Trump is an embarrassing laughingstock. And they all back him to the hilt because that's what it takes to win. And look, Mitch McConnell is very smart, but he is also the person most responsible for the situation in American politics today. It's because he understands the fundamental future challenges for the Republican Party, which is they are a primarily white conservative party in a country where white conservative voters are becoming a smaller and smaller part of the electorate every day. So instead of one option would have been to broaden their agenda to appeal to younger voters and more women voters and voters of color, or would be to try to restrict the political power of the emerging electorate, and they chose the latter. And that is the path that put Donald Trump in the White House. And Mitch McConnell is, like I said, he's very savvy, and he understands how you get political power and how you wield it. And I think the thing Democrats have to come to understand is that there is this great asymmetry in American politics where Democrats view political power as a means to a policy end, and Republicans view political power as an end in of itself. And until we understand who the Republicans are, we will not beat them.
Well, and that gets to my next question, actually. You know, do you believe the Democratic Party as it stands today is, to borrow the phrase that you used, eyes wide open about what the Republican Party is today?
No. Some are, for sure. But I think a lot of Democrats, particularly elected Democrats in Washington, remain, I think, somewhat dangerously naive about who the Republicans are and what their goals are. And, you know, and even, you know, in Joe Biden, who is someone I've known and worked with for a very long time, but part of his message is that there will be an epiphany if Trump leaves. And I just do not believe that to be the case. And I think that if you're operating under that assumption, you're not going to be able to confront them on the political battlefield on equal footing, because they're going to have an advantage because they're simply playing a different, more brutal version of the game you want to play.
Yeah. So the subtitle of the book is A Plan to Make America a Democracy Again, which, you know, of course, leads us to here. You don't think it's a democracy now. Why is
right.
that?
I think we should be clear historically. America has always been democracy in more an aspiration than execution. You know, we started out with a system where only white male landowners could vote, and we have too slowly moved in the direction towards more democracy over time. But, like, we have to look very carefully at the fact that both structurally and by virtue of Republican strategy, the political power of the progressive diverse majority in this country is greatly diminished. Donald Trump became president with 3 million fewer votes. Donald Trump won Wisconsin with fewer votes than Mitt Romney got in 2012. Mitt Romney lost Wisconsin by 7 points, which has a lot to do with voter ID laws and other voter suppression in Wisconsin. The United States Senate majority that basically shut down the impeachment trial of Trump represents a distinct minority of Americans. It is possible in American politics for 18% of the United States population to represent 50 Senate seats. All of those things stand in the way of the progressive policies that Democrats care so much about. So if we want to have the policies we care about and, I think, fundamentally protect our democracy from being ripped apart to shreds, we have to make democratic reform a centerpiece of the party.
In having this conversation and reading the book, quite frankly, it can sound like it's all doom and gloom. But the book, you know, as the subtitle suggests, does lay out a plan forward for readers and citizens more generally so they can work toward what you believe is a more democratic future in the United States. So let's dig into that a little bit. How do we move forward and restore faith in democratic institutions in your mind?
Well, I think it begins with simply making them more democratic. So at the state level, that begins with Democrats winning power and then not just undoing voter suppression laws, but putting in place voter expansion, where we make it as easy as possible for eligible voters to participate in our process. Because ultimately, no matter what party you are, we should want every American to have a stake in our democracy, to feel that it is worth their time and energy and commitment to vote. So that's one. Two, we have to undo gerrymandering. Gerrymandering is the process by which we draw congressional and state legislative district lines in a way that benefit one party. I mean, Wisconsin, as you know, is the laboratory example of how it works, where Democrats win statewide and still have a distinct minority of state legislative seats. We have to deal with money in politics, what has happened since Citizens United, where a billionaire can essentially buy a congressional race. We have to deal with, and we have to deal with the courts, because the Supreme Court and the federal courts have been rigged by Mitch McConnell and Donald Trump. If we do all of those things, we can make it so ultimately, like, all we're asking for is for both parties to have to succeed by persuading a majority of Americans of the merits of their positions. And whichever party comes out on that should be the one in charge. But right now, Republicans don't have to do that, which is why, despite having many fewer voters across the country, they have more political power. So we have to address that.
As you mentioned, of course, as a result of Project Red Map in 2010. Wisconsin is pretty heavily gerrymandered. We'll, of course, be deciding the new maps this year. And we'll have a Democratic governor and a Republican legislature. So it's likely that things will change. The maps will change. But as we look at the national election in 2020, how important do you believe Wisconsin is going to be?
Oh, I think that the most likely scenario is that Wisconsin will decide who the president of the United States is. That may not be great for the people who want to watch television commercials or answer the phone in Wisconsin, but it is ground zero in the battle for the White House, without a doubt.
I have been getting a lot of phone calls. I think we all have.
I can imagine, yes.
Part of the issue when we look back at 2016 in Wisconsin was both third-party voters, yes, but especially fewer Black voters going to the polls, particularly in a city like mine, Milwaukee. Do you think the Democrats running for president are doing enough to reach out to these voters?
Everyone can always do more, for sure, without a doubt. I think we saw positive signs in the 2018 election, particularly with the election of your Democratic governor. But we have to do more. We can leave no vote on the table. And it has to be an effort that is year-round, right? That is not, we cannot start trying to reach out to African-American voters in Milwaukee 3 months before the election, 3 weeks before the election. And Ben Wickler, who's the chair of the Democratic Party and a friend of mine, is by all accounts doing an incredible job of making sure there's year-round organizing happening in Wisconsin. So I feel very good about those efforts. Now, whoever our nominee is going to have to build on the work that has been done in the absence of that nominee, but there's a very strong foundation being laid.
You know, of course, the DNC has decided to come to Milwaukee. Do you think that's going to be helpful for them?
Yeah, if the nominee uses it in the right way, it can be a massive organizing tool. And, you know, Obama had his convention in 2008 in Denver, Colorado, and Denver was a very tough swing state for Democrats back then. Colorado was a very tough swing state for Democrats back then. So our campaign used it as a way to recruit volunteers, to register people to vote, to use it as a way to get our message out. And so it is an opportunity to use it. Hopefully the nominee does. If you do not, the convention does not have that same impact. So that, like, it can be if it's done right. And I fully hope and expect it will be.
Although the book in parts can feel doom and gloom, of course, you do have a lot of advice in there. And something that you say right off the bat is, I remain optimistic. What keeps you optimistic?
The people that I have met since the election 2016. And there has been this wave of activism in America since basically the day after Trump won, where a lot of people who have been sitting on the sidelines of American politics got involved, and they jumped in with 2 feet. They started Swing Left and Run for Something and Indivisible. They went to the Women's March. They protested at airports during the Muslim ban. They marched for our lives after what happened in Parkland. And there has been this wave of activism that I think if we continue that, if we can win this election in 2020 and then keep working, like, that's the thing, is that the work does not end when Trump loses. That's when it truly begins. But if we can do that, then we can be able to look back at this moment, and the election of what I view to be our worst citizen will have sparked a wave of citizenship in this country, and Americans can come out better in the long run.
All right. Well, Dan Pfeiffer, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me and sharing your work.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Dan Pfeiffer is a former aide to President Obama, as well as one of the co-hosts of Pod Save America. His new book is called Untrumping America, A Plan to Make America a Democracy Again. He spoke with Lake Effect's Joy Powers, and they'll be chatting on stage this Monday, March 9th at Turner Hall. You can find a link to more information at wuwm.com.